All right, all right. Welcome to the Toddcast. You know, I recently got back from speaking at Business Mastery for Tony Robbins. And one of the coolest things is helping businesses in the medical space or out of the medical space accelerate their revenue. It's like something I absolutely love being a part of, because once you realize that revenue is dribbling out at different stages along the process, it could be a negotiation. It could be in the patient lead gen or your prospect's lead gen process. It could be how you convince and convert. All of a sudden, you realize that there's more than enough revenue. It's just dribbling out. And every business leaks revenue, sometimes in ways leaders can't see. And at that Tony event, in the crowd, people that were there a year before that used my strategies over the last 12 months, as I walked through the room and told stories and brought people up to tell their stories, we had $200 million in client case studies. One of them, a physician. We started a medical school, did $46 million in 9 months when they had only sold $1 million lifetime for students. And we got that machine going. Now, here's the real trick about you. And it doesn't matter what industry you're in. Can we get your machine going? And how can leaders without hustle or misdirection quietly plug those leaks so they could retain more and celebrate more often with their spouse at home, with their team at the office, with their clients and their patients? This is all about fulfilling that big opportunity where you can grow and discover financial freedom. And that's why today's conversation matters the most. This podcast is brought to you by the WireBuzz team. Now, if that name sounds familiar, it's because I've spent the past decade growing WireBuzz into a digital marketing powerhouse designed to maximize clarity in complex sales processes so we can help accelerate revenue. And we do this in three phases. Phase one, we transform your website to function like your best salesperson and then also incorporate persuasive on-demand sales videos. Now your entire team is aligned on messaging and they're injecting massive clarity into your prospect's head. So your site looks great, but it also has engaging content that helps your team sell on demand 24/7. The next phase, phase two, we train your sales and marketing teams to sell remotely or in person to expand the impact of your sales team. And the third phase is we develop and run targeted ads to your prospects, scale those ads to help you achieve more business results. Sign up for the WireBuzz company newsletter to learn more about effective and simple ways to improve your company messaging, attract more digital attention, and ultimately make more sales. Justin Abadie is with me. He's the founder and CEO of Physicians Thrive and a partner at Larson Financial. He's a financial strategist and a business consultant who helps doctors and entrepreneurs and even investors design systems that lead for long-term financial independence. Justin, welcome to the Toddcast.
It's great to be here.
Hey, can you do me a favor? Like, dude, you've got a really cool backstory, experienced financial freedom at a young age, decided you weren't going to sit on the beach and drink Mai Tais forever and you wanted to get back into the game. Give us the backstory on what makes you unique and how you serve people today.
Well, most people don't realize that living in a doctor's shoes, that pathway, you would think that it's once you get there, you arrived, you've got it easy, you've got it made. You see maybe the house, the cars, you see that they have access to all the different things. But under the surface, there is a mountain of pressure, stress, anxiety. And up until they get done with education and get into their first job, they've had no training experience or education on how to do business, how to do finance. And if you look at where we are today as a country with healthcare as it is, you get 7 to 10 minutes per visit when you go to see the doctor, and it's not enough.
Justin, when you're in the patient room, don't you hear the stopwatch in your head? Because you know it's like a 7 minute turn and then they're in the next room.
It is. I mean, you can hear them outside the room, flipping the chart, looking through the stuff. They got to cram, get ready to do it. Because so much of the pie is not going to them. They don't have time to spend more time with you because they only get 7 to 8% of the revenue they generate. Think about that. Do you want your surgeon or your specialist getting paid this much of your bill that you're paying? Or do you want them to get a healthy portion for the care that they're giving you? And so we've seen in the last 40 years, little by little, the way the revenue cycle management process is occurring is that most of it's gotten stripped out and away from the physician. So that way they don't even have the ability to afford to spend that time with you. And so I didn't figure that out until 10 years into this, as we got deeper and deeper into our clients' lives. But going back to your question, it all started by marrying into a family of doctors. My wife's father just finished up a career in emergency medicine. Both of her brothers are in it. Both of their wives are in medicine. Aunt and uncle, cousins, husband, father, grandfather. On my side, there's ENT, there's family medicine, there's OBGYN. There's multiple generations on the NABDI side in medicine. And watching my colleagues, you know, from fraternity and sororities go into medicine and just slog through all those years and get set behind by 10 years, as everyone else has been out in the workforce, they've lost all those years of compounding opportunity to grow and to save while they're trying to pay down debt, $200,000-$300,000. And so we want to be healthy. We want to be able to be at peak performance. Well, if you're physically not there, you're mentally not there, you're spiritually not there, there's lots of different factors that get in the way. And a physician's life is literally like an anvil on their back, pushing them down every day.
My wife comments often that, dude, you really need to diversify your friend group because they're all doctors. And it makes sense. But one of the common themes we hear at dinner with people that we're close with is exactly what you're describing. Mm-hmm. We have physician friends that are world-class, like the medical one of the doctors, a team physician for a major league sports team, and who is moonlighting to, who does that, has a medical practice and is moonlighting as a physician professor at a medical school. And you can hear the circus clown music, do, 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 as they're juggling throughout their week. And yes, they have a nice lifestyle, but I'll tell you, they are significantly more frugal than we are. And I hear that stress and strain all the time. Let's talk about a leader, like align their financial independence and their goals with the desire to make a bigger impact. Because it sounds to me like these are great people that also didn't get into medicine because they wanted to be business people. They wanted to serve, right? And there is a lack of, they don't even have business education. And most of my friends that are like physicians that are in their retirement years were left with very, very little. So, I mean, this is a real reality. And it sounds like giving them some type of financial independence goals helps professionals, physicians, or any type of professional prepare for where they're going economically. Am I right?
Well, I'm just thinking about all the conversations that we have with people that reach out to us. And there was a 60-year-old plus doctor that wanted help with a contract. And as we pull back the curtain, $5,000 is all they had in retirement savings. That's it.
Yeah.
And where did it go? Well, they had all the things with the kids and they cashed out their retirement plans to pay for things, the current stuff now. And is just unbelievable, the lack of understanding. When they get 2 years out of training, they are an accredited investor. Accredited investor is important for physicians. Most physicians don't even know what that means. And once they become an accredited investor, they can get access to private equity. They can get involved in owning companies and real estate and different ventures. That is where big money plays. And so why is it that 10-year, 20-year into practice, they haven't even begun to look into those places?
Yeah.
As business owners, as entrepreneurs, we have always been about generating passive income.
Amen, brother.
If we don't figure out how to get out of the rat race of trading time for money, which is what a doctor's life typically is. They don't start turning on these areas where they could after they've been in practice for 2 years. So that's a huge issue. They don't know where to prioritize. And here's the thing. They have a target on their back. Every salesperson of any sort of product, equipment, resource, service, whatever it is, they want physicians to be, they want to have them as customers. And so they get burned early, usually. And then what happens is they don't trust anybody. And then they try to do it themselves. There's even a whole a website dedicated to being a do-it-yourself doctor. And as you and I both know, we can't do everything.
Yep.
If we try to do everything all the time, we try to master everything, then we're not going to be able to get the altitude that we want to get in the areas that we're the most proficient in, what our strengths are.
Yep.
And so physicians tend to become do-it-yourselfers because they just don't know who to trust and they get burned. But I think the industry as a whole, they're conditioned. They're told what to do from the time they graduate undergraduate school with medical school. All those years, they're just told what to do and they're not taught how to think. And the biggest problem they have is that their thinking is not where it needs to be. It's not outside of themselves in terms of that they have to start building teams and building processes and building systems around them. So that way, why is a physician having to go pick up a second job or other things to do to fill in the gap? Like that's what's crazy. I think you were kind of alluding to that a little bit ago with the moonlighting and picking up all these extra things. Why are they having to do that? You think that you could just get your MD, get your DO, and then once you have that, go to a good practice, build up a patient base that might take a year to 2 years, and then you should be set because there aren't enough physicians to support the community as it is. We have a shortage. It's getting worse. So there ought to be enough flow coming in, and yet they're still having to think about doing other things. Now, we're big advocates of doing other things. They have ideas, they have opportunities, they want to invent things, and they should. One of our clients invented artificial intelligence for the operating room.
Beautiful.
It's called Insight Surgical, and it's literally using computer vision to track everything that happens in the OR, all of the moving parts, the inventory, the staff flow, so that way you can increase efficiency, you can cut cost, and you can improve quality with lowering infection risk. There's a whole bunch of things there, but you know, like as they have ideas and can develop things, those are things we would be in support of, but they shouldn't have to go find more work and more time to spend working because the job isn't cutting it.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are listening right now that are in traditional business or a physician. So what about you? Have you started thinking about what kind of money you need at the end of the game of your work years? Like, what do you need to have in the bank? Because there are systems or practices that entrepreneurs could be using and put into place to speed up decision-making, to speed up revenue, to remove risk off of the table. You see this, Justin, all the time. What should people take into consideration about the systems or the practices that can speed up the decision-making or even the revenue acceleration?
Are you talking about like in the physician side of things or just in general?
Yeah, I think it could be either. I think, you know, feel free to do it with physicians and that's totally sufficient. My audience is filled with entrepreneurs and physicians. What's out there for people that they should be taking into consideration so they can plug some of those leaks and start realizing their full earning potential?
When they launch, if they can get their foundation established in the first year or two, every year after that, they ought to be thinking about what is another way that they can generate a new income stream. One of our favorite income streams that physicians can access that we can't as non-medical professionals is having ownership in a surgery center. Mm-hmm. Most surgery centers are very worthwhile investments to have to generate passive income. And it might be that they don't have access to one, so they need to start one and bring together others to create one. So if they could spend year by year are thinking of new ways so that way eventually they get to the place where they have 5 or 6 different sources of income coming in, then what happens is you don't have one product or one service or one thing that you're relying on. Master the one thing first. Don't spread yourself too thin. Get the one thing that's your core going first, but then add a second, a third, or fourth, and begin to continuously enhance those areas to get more opportunity coming in. We're starting physician practices all across the country. We have about 15 states right now that we have practices that are in their first year of building their practice. And for them, it's not just getting credentialed with the insurance companies and doing their standard CPT codes. It's what else can they be doing in addition to that to add new lines? Concierge is a fantastic way. Add a VIP level so that way you have access to more. We have a client right now who has a GI practice. It's taken some unique turns in terms of adding some additional patients that they weren't expecting originally, but they have celebrities now reaching out to him, and there's VIP levels of service that can be incorporated into what they're doing that are different than what the typical structure is. So as you think about your year, most people don't plan out what's the focus for this year. What are my core rocks, or what are my core objectives, my core initiatives, the things that I want to accomplish, so that way by the end of the year, I get from where I am now to where I want to be. Coming up with, as a part of that set of starts that should happen for the year, mm-hmm. what are those new revenue streams that don't require you to do it? You can maybe hire somebody or have a contractor. It doesn't have to be that you have to hire a whole bunch of employees. Sometimes it's where you bring contractors in and you have them on a 1099 relationship with you, and they can be a part of that. So that way you can plug and play. And if something doesn't work out, that person, you can bring somebody else in. But at the end of the day, it has to expand beyond you. It can't just be you by yourself. It has to be a team. You need to think about each year, how do you grow that team little by little, more and more, so that way you have more horses in the fold helping you pull more weight. As you know, the way things just compound with being able to do more.
I think this is an exercise in leverage. Like, where can you get additional leverage? So you've got multiple revenue streams. And my dad used to always say to me, dude, he was like, get really comfortable generating revenue from multiple directions and not rely on just one. Whenever you rely on just one, you become significantly more vulnerable. And I'm seeing a lot of physicians investing in surgical centers, or we've got one right now in our client base that is opening up. He invested in semis that have a CT or PET scan in it and goes to cardiology centers, and his team goes out there and does scans in locations where there isn't a CT or PET scans for cardiac imaging until a big city. So all these patients that are getting put into going into a big city that might live in a rural area is a perfect way for them. So there's an infinite number. We got a lot of physicians that are getting into real estate and multifamily home investments. And now all of a sudden their money's working for them and they're getting leverage. And I've even noticed, Justin, in my own life, that revenue around the Hartley house changed when I had revenue coming in multiple directions and got leverage. But I don't think professionals really learn about how to find those moments and how to seize them. So while they're working, they've got other basically income streams coming in that compounds the amount of money they're putting away.
Well, when you have 90% of physicians today, for example, that are employed when they take their first job, mm-hmm. it used to be that over 80% of doctors had their own practice or had say in how their practice was run. In the last 40 years, that's changed dramatically. And so what can they do? Well, it might be that they have to renegotiate their contract to create some carve-outs to give them some freedom. Yeah. So that way they can continue to do and have access to perform the duties of their job that they need to. But the thing is, on the nights and weekends that are not competitive to the practice directly, they have an outlet for it. Or it is that they need to open up their own practice. And once they do that, then they have the freedom to pursue those avenues. Telehealth, like hiring nurse practitioners and PAs to be on your team. We have clients that are doing telehealth all across the country in a variety of specialties. And it's making it easier for healthcare providers to access patients. And it's easier for patients to be able to access a healthcare provider because they're not having to deal with the commute. Now, not every specialty can do that. There's a lot of specialties that would never be able to do that based on what kind of care they have to provide. But there's different levels at which they can offset or offload some of these areas of the practices they're expanding to create more inroads to how they're getting access to care. So that would be an area that I would think about. So the concierge side or the telehealth side.
You know, noticing one of the things we do here is we teach physicians in their practices how to generate new patients. Okay. So like maybe every month we've got a cohort of 50 to 75 different practices that come in and we teach them once a month in a group setting and we set up the systems for them. But one of the things I've discovered along the way is how they end up optimizing the practice before they go and optimize the next business opportunity. Is the practice, to me, if they are the owner, feels like it is their core business that needs to be amplified. And then they've got opportunities to put money elsewhere. When you help with physicians in negotiation, give me an idea on ways that physicians are losing money with negotiations that you commonly see.
There are three main survey systems out there that come up with what the standard compensation is that employers use. It's the MGMA, the AMGA, and Sullivan Cotter. And I bring these up because most of the time, employers are using that as the baseline to set what they're going to offer as the median pay for a specialty.
Right.
What physicians don't understand is that, where is that data coming from? Is it coming from their peers on a national level, on all practice types, even the best paying practices? It's a very small sliver of inputs coming in from big health systems. So it's not actually picking up what the numbers look like. And so we typically see a 10 to 20% reduction in what the going market rates actually are. And think about it. If you are in 10 years of education and training, you get a job offer, which seems like it's four times what you're making. It's like, this is great. I'm happy to have an opportunity, finally start making some money, then, you know, basically being paid as a part-time worker. There's a tendency to just jump at it and take things as they are. Employers will often say, this is the same contract that we give to everybody. It's compliant with state law. It's been vetted by our attorneys, and we don't make any changes. You can have someone take a look at it if you want. And some places are suggesting they should do it. And some are saying it's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. Don't do it. But the reality is 99% of the time, as we do a review, we find things that are out of date with the state. We actually have to help their attorneys make their contract compliant with state law. We find that the numbers are not on par.
Yeah. They're below par, right?
Think about this. What does a big health system want? They want to lower the cost of labor because they're not good financial managers. That's the reality. They have a tough job managing thousands of people, and they're managing this level, this level, this level, down to the ground level. And so it's like they're not really touching everything that they need to be getting their hands on to really understand how to run the organization. So physician pay, that seems like that's an easy target. It's a big number. Labor cost is a big percentage of what the overhead is for an organization. So, and doctors are very amicable. They just kind of go along with things. And they've kind of been conditioned this way.
Yeah.
And so when they have a few different offers, they start to get a little bit more confident. When they have contracts that we've reviewed and negotiated, and they have those to reference, now they get even more confident. And Better yet, if we do it for them, then they don't have to do it themselves. So we literally will function like the professional athlete has an agent. We are the agent for the doctor. And we've gotten $45,000 improvements, $75,000, $95,000. We just got a contract that was offered for call pay. We improved it by $510,000 per year for a group of six gastroenterologists.
Wow.
So it is extremely possible to make changes. And again, 95% of healthcare leadership aren't physicians. They've never treated a patient in their life.
Yeah.
And these databases are always a year old because they're using last year's data. Why is it that the healthcare system has been giving like CMS cuts? CMS cuts every year hit doctors, but they don't hit mid-levels and they don't hit facility fees. It's time for that to stop.
Yeah.
You talked about being on Capitol Hill, working with the White House and working with Congress in a variety of capacities. Well, H.R. 10073 is legislation that was introduced last year. It's been stuck in committee, but it is to stop the Medicare cuts. It's to reverse some of those cuts. Mm-hmm. Because Medicare, the CMS system has been, a lot of physician pay is oftentimes affected by those numbers. And there's more restructuring and more auditing that needs to be done elsewhere. As you've seen in the last year, probably, a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse that's coming to the surface with Medicaid and Medicare and a whole bunch of other programs. And so we need to continue to see those things change. But back to your question about negotiation, they need to be equipped with data. They need to know that they are an extremely valuable asset, an asset that is in short supply, and that employers typically start out down here and are willing to come up here. You just have to ask for it. It's why signing bonuses oftentimes are left off of a contract, and simply by asking, they get one. It's very common practice.
Justin, as you're speaking, it made me realize that, you know, I accepted a dream job. Years ago, I was one of the leaders at iHeartRadio on the digital team for seven of the largest nationally syndicated talk shows. Mm-hmm. And that morning, my wife and I had a very direct conversation about how I needed to get a job fast. And I was miserable where I was. And so when I got offered the job, I really was still in the conversation with my wife. And I was so grateful for the opportunity to come home and say, I solved the problem, and that I accepted a job way below market price and got stuck in that poor negotiation for 4 years until I had significant wins to negotiate myself into a much better position. But the opportunity of lost time is so high. I don't think enough people take into consideration how important it is to make sure you get yourself in a very solid negotiation before you say the magic word of yes, because then you are locked in. Justin, for people that want to learn more, that need guidance, I know you've got a couple of places for people to go to, physiciansthrive.com and your advocacy group. Please do me a favor. Tell me about both and what can people learn?
Yeah, physiciansthrive.com. We are the largest advisory group in the nation. We have over 400 people on our team all across the country. We have tens of thousands of physician clients, all specialties, all practice types. Anything from taking that first job after training, which is how Physicians Thrive started, actually. We were teaching at hospitals, medical centers, and health systems to help them learn what they need to know as they're launching their careers, from the very first job all the way to maybe them transitioning to start their own practice. And so from the very beginning, we even have some things on the debt management side for medical students starting out. But we go all the way from medical school to the retirement side, exiting a practice, selling a practice, all the transition stuff, estate planning.
Valuable.
That's the Physicians Thrive side. Doc Nation is an advocacy group that is active on Capitol Hill. It's helping physicians form unions. There are, believe it or not, active unions around the country. There's about 10% of physicians that are a part of a union. And when there is nothing else that they can do to get the respect that they need, we've seen unions actually be pretty effective with getting physicians the type of representation that they need. So that's what the Doc Nation side is. It's essentially whatever hurdles or problems or challenges that they're facing, we're a team there to help support them in that capacity, typically in the workplace or overcoming issues with, could be within the coding, the billing and coding side of things. Mm-hmm. So, but both teams are here to support in a variety of capacities. And so feel free to contact us on our websites, the contact us form. We're happy to have conversations, do educational sessions, whether it's for a department or a residency program, or it could be the faculty within a department at an institution. There's a lot of questions and concerns. Taxes and inflation are the biggest barriers to building wealth and eroding your ability to grow. And so, to your point, if your story personally, keeping on par with inflation, if we're not doing at least that, we're falling behind. And unfortunately, I think right now we're seeing a situation where children today, this generation is the first generation where they're going to have it worse off than their parents did.
Totally. Totally.
I see. How is that possible in 2025? We're the greatest country on the planet.
Yeah.
And yet that is the situation. And why is it that parents and grandparents are telling their kids not to go into medicine?
Yeah. I have more physician friends, man, that are realtors on the side. absolutely blows my mind. And I can see what the long-term impact of side hustles will have on our overall quality of health. And that scares me. He's Justin Navidi. He's the founder of and CEO of Physicians Thrive and a partner at Larson Financial. For more information, physiciansthrive.com. And the advocacy group is Doc Nation. Justin, thank you so much for coming on to the Toddcast and advocating for our physicians out there. I appreciate you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
Yo, that was a powerful episode. And from what we just learned, it should be obvious how you can now implement these lessons in your life to get to the next level. Now, before you bounce, I just have three quick thoughts. First, thank you for taking me on your incredible life journey. Second, if you receive some value from me and you want to pay it forward, it would mean the world to me if you left an honest rating and review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. I'd be incredibly grateful. And lastly, if you share this episode, whether it be a screenshot or a photo from where you're listening, anything via Instagram stories or LinkedIn, Facebook, or any of the social media sites, just tag me and the guest. I'll repost your content and I'll reply back in the comments because I love mixing it up. In fact, I'd love to share your shout outs in my feed too. Not only are these shout outs really good for you and for me, but they also help us book more amazing guests because they'll be able to see the reach that you're helping to cultivate. This is a way for you to help contribute to the show. So thank you again for listening, and I look forward to earning a regular spot inside that ear of yours. Let's grow.